Okay, we're going to be in what chapter this morning? Chapter 2 of Galatians. Some good stuff in this book. I've been here many times, but yet continue to just see deeper and deeper. It's a deep pool. Okay, verse 1. Then 14 years after I went up again to Jerusalem with Barnabas and took Titus with me also, and I went up by revelation and communicated to them that gospel which I preached among the Gentiles, but privately to them which were of reputation, lest by any means I should run or had run in vain. But neither Titus, who was with me, being a Greek, was compelled to be circumcised, and that because of false brethren unawares brought in, who came in privily to spy out our liberty which we have in Christ Jesus, that they might bring us into bondage, to whom we gave place by subjection, no, not for an hour, that the truth of the gospel might continue with you. But of these who seem to be somewhat, whosoever they were, it makes no matter to me. God accepts no man's person, for they who seem to be somewhat in conference added nothing to me. But contrariwise, when they saw that the gospel of the uncircumcision was committed to me, as the gospel of the circumcision was to Peter, for he that wrought effectually in Peter to the apostleship of the circumcision, the same was mighty in me toward the Gentiles. And when James and Cephas and John, who seemed to be pillars, perceived the grace that was given to me, they gave to me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship, and that we should go to the heathen, and they to the circumcision. Only they would that we should remember the poor, and the same which I also was forward to do. But when Peter was come to Antioch, I withstood him to the face, because he was to be blamed. For before that certain came from James, he did eat with the Gentiles, but when they were come, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing them which were of the circumcision. And the other Jews dissembled likewise with him, insomuch that Barnabas also was carried away with their dissimulation. But when I saw that they walked not uprightly according to the truth of the gospel, I said to Peter before them all, if thou being a Jew live after the manner of the Gentiles, and not as do the Jews, why compel the Gentiles to live as do the Jews? We who are Jews by nature and not sinners of the Gentile, knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the law, but by the faith of Jesus Christ, even we have believed in Jesus Christ that we might be justified by the faith of Christ, and not by the works of the law. For by the works of the law shall no flesh be justified. But if while we seek to be justified by Christ, we ourselves also are found sinners, is there therefore Christ the minister of sin? God forbid. For if I build again the things which I destroyed, I make myself a transgressor. For I through the law am dead to the law, that I might live unto God. I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live, yet not I, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. I do not frustrate the grace of God, for if righteousness came by the law, then Christ is dead in vain. I don't want to shock you, but there's a lot of mistranslations in this chapter. Okay, let's go back to the first. Then 14 years after I went up again to Jerusalem with Barnabas. Barnabas means the son of what? Rest. Son of rest. And along with him he took Titus, who means what? A nurse. So he figured he was going to get a little rest and a little medical attention maybe, okay? Get healed up a little bit, because walking around them days back here through them rocks and climbing them hills and briars and brambles and everything else you run into, probably beat you up a little bit, wouldn't it? He was looking for something, but he didn't find the rest he was looking for, because God had him on a mission. And if you look at the next verse, it says it very clearly. I went up by revelation and communicated to them. What it literally says is this: because of a revelation, I went up. He had a revelation from God, and that's the thing that took him there. God wanted him to go by revelation. He said unto them, not that gospel, but the gospel. What does the word gospel mean?
Good news.
He went to tell them some good things. Everybody else is condemning. Why? Where's the good news at? What's good about 99% of creation going to hell? I can't get that good picture, you know what I mean?
Or that you're not good enough.
Yeah. See, all that condemnation, guilt just don't work. He said, which I preach among the Gentiles. Paul said, I preach this among the Gentiles. Everybody's going to make it. The beautiful picture of the reconciliation of all. And he did it by how? Revelation. And privately, he said, and privately he preached it to them that were of reputation, lest by any means, I should. Here's where King James misses it again. He says, run or had run in vain. But here's what it should say. Lest by any means I should preach hastily, devoid of the truth. And there's a whole lot of people out here today that's preaching hastily. They find out something and they get a revelation. Okay? A revelation is nothing more than knowledge until you have experienced it. Then it becomes truth to you. It's just information, okay? It's information that you've picked up on and you know it, but you haven't experienced it yet, so it's not real in your life yet. And that's what he said, you don't want to do that. He said, he don't want to preach too hastily, devoid of the truth. Truth doesn't come instantly, does it? We learn bit by bit. What does it say in Isaiah? Here a little, there a little, line upon line, precept upon precept. That's the way it's going to come. And it's not going to come instantly like a lot of people think it is. They think they get this big aha moment and I got the whole thing figured out.
Well, the thing comes in the 14 years.
Yeah. He took him 14 years right there. That's just one part of the time. He said, but neither Titus, who was with me, being a Greek, was compelled or forced by threats. He wasn't forced by threats to be circumcised or anything, like everybody else. They accepted him. Okay? And that because, when he did come, he was saying, because through the brethren or the pretended associates, those false brethren are pretending to be associates. Do you think the church has a few of them today?
Hypocrites.
That's another word for them. But they came in unawares. Literally, they sneaked in unseen. Okay? They were brought in. He says, unawares brought in. They snuck in. Why were they unaware of them? Tell me.
Because they look like everybody else.
Okay. But see, but is that what it says? No spiritual discernment. See, no one was paying attention. They brought in people, and that's what the church is doing today. Just get warm bodies through the door, and God will be happy. God wants people to hear what He's saying. And everybody don't have ears to hear, do they? See? It's okay. If they can't hear, if God wants them to hear, He'll put ears on them. Don't worry about it.
And if they don't hear, they'll just fire the preacher.
They'll just aggravate everybody in the building if they're not supposed to be here, wouldn't they?
Been there, done that.
Yep. Okay. Who came in or sneaked in unseen. They sneaked in privately to spy out or to plot against our freedom, which we have in Christ, that they, cross out the word might, because that's not even in the language, that's an added word, that they bring us into bondage. That word right there is utterly enslave us. That word means they want to utterly enslave us. And that's what the thing about religion is. They want to totally dominate and control you and bring you into total slavery or bondage so they can tell you what to do.
Bring you back under the law.
Huh?
They want to bring you back under the law.
Absolutely, because that's all they see. They can't see anything but the law. You think the Jews was going to give up easy? Religion is not going to give up easy today either. It's going to fight you tooth and nail to drag you back in that system some way. I couldn't tell you how many people has walked in this building right here, and after they were here a short time, someone where they left the other fellowship that they were at, they came in here, they'd say, we need you to be a Sunday school teacher. We need you to be this. We need you to lead praise and worship. We need you for that. And you know what they'd do? Right back out the door. So they weighed in the balances and were found lacking. You know, that's all. They just didn't have enough commitment to stay with the truth. To put themselves in a position of notoriety was more important than knowing the truth. Well, I know you didn't. You were tempted though, weren't you? They come to you, but it don't take long, boys. They'll become knocking at your door. They want to get you. And I'm telling you, there's been a lot of them came here that heard the truth and said, oh my God. And then that temptation came. They said, oh well, okay, I can help God over in that place. Well, that ego's a tough thing. That ego's tough. And it gets many a man. That's the harlot, you know. But that's the way it is. Okay, verse 5. To whom we gave place, okay, and literally we gave no place by submission or submitting, by subjection or by submitting. No, not for an hour, that the truth of the gospel, cross out that word, Mike, because it's not supposed to be there either, so that the gospel continue or remain, and here's what that word out there doesn't say, continue with you, it says remain permanently in you. Once you get the gospel, do you think it's ever going to leave you?
No.
See, because it says, he said, we didn't give place for their coming in and trying to take us back under the law. We didn't give place for it. That the gospel would remain permanently in you. And that's what it's all about. Okay, verse 6. But of those who seemed to be somewhat, and the word seemed isn't what it should be, they thought themselves to be something. Just what we're talking about, that ego of man telling you how great you are and what you can do to accomplish great things for God. You can do nothing. Jesus said, you can do nothing without me. Didn't he say that?
Yep.
See, so we got to get past that ego thing. I mean, I'm telling you, ego thing's a nasty thing. And Paul says, whatsoever they were, it makes no matter or difference, it should say. It makes no difference to me. God accepts no man's person or outward appearance because they, or the ones who thought themselves to be something, in conference added nothing, or literally, they imparted nothing to me. Paul said, the ones who thought they were so great gave me nothing. Nothing is a big fat zero, isn't it? And you know what? You'll hear people, I heard people all my life, people minister on TV and radio, and they seemed like they had that gift of speech, and they could rattle on for hours and hours and hours, but it was void of any food for my spirit. And you know, early in my life, I thought, man, that would be so nice just to be able to speak like that to people and just keep people enthralled with the voice. But see, it was the serpent's voice. It wasn't the voice of God. Because it never fed the people. When they left, before they got out of the parking lot, they was cussing their kids and spitting on their wife and slap backhanding somebody else in the car, trying to run over somebody, trying to get out of the parking lot to get to the restaurant first. So how much truth did they hear? Because if you hear truth, if you hear truth and let it get inside of you, you can never be the same. It's impossible to be the same. If you hear it, it will change you. There's no way to get around it. Can't do it. But in verse 7 he says, but contrariwise, when they saw that the gospel of the uncircumcision was committed to me, as the gospel of circumcision was committed unto Peter, okay? He said, okay, so contrary-wise, what they thought, they actually saw the gospel functioning in me. No compromise, just standing right there telling it. He says, verse 8, because he that was active, it should say wrought effectually, it should say was active. He that was active in Peter to the apostleship of the circumcision, the same was mighty or was active in me toward the Gentiles. Now see, there's things where didn't make any sense. The words wrought effectually and was mighty are the same word. Why are they translated two different ways in the same sentence? And people wonder why they're confused. Let me guess. Hey, you think? It's okay. Proverbs 25:2 tells you why. It's the glory of God to conceal a matter, a thing, and honor kings to search out a matter. The word thing and matter is the same word, devar, which means word. So he said, the word was concealed, and as kings and priests, we search it out. That's just, you don't have to fight that one. Let it go. Okay. And when James, Cephas, and John, who seemed or thought themselves to be pillars, see, it's who seemed to be pillars, that word seemed is the same thing up there, who thought themselves.
Now, mine says perceived.
Guess what that was? They were the ones thinking they were something.
Yeah, it wasn't everybody else.
Everybody else didn't, whether they did or not, the material. They thought they were something special.
Yeah.
That ego was working on them too. Yeah, they thought they'd earned it already. Who thought themselves to be pillars, perceived or literally knew the grace that was given. So they knew the grace that was given. What is grace?
The divine influence in your heart.
In your heart inside, and a reflection of that out into your lifestyle. See, they saw that, see. It said they knew it. They had to have seen it, didn't they? Grace can be seen. It was given unto me. They gave to me in Barnabas, right, the son of rest, the right hands of fellowship or communion, that we should go to the heathen and they to the circumcision. Only they would that we should remember the poor, the same which I also was quick to do. But when Peter was come to Antioch, and the word Antioch means driven against, I opposed him to the face, because he was to be what? Found with fault. He was found to be fault because he was eating and drinking with the Gentiles in the manner of the Gentiles, and as soon as one of his brethren from the Jewish nation comes into the neighborhood, he backs away from them like they got the plague. He was being a hypocrite. And that's why Paul said it very gingerly. He was found with fault. His ego, he was more concerned about what they thought about him.
Yeah.
He was his reputation. Well, that's the ego of man. That's what it is. It's going to always be politic and to be sitting on the throne, to be God. Okay. Verse 12. Prior to the coming of that certain man from James, he did eat with the Gentiles, but when they were come, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing them which were of the circumcision. And the other Jews dissimulated likewise, literally acted hypocritically in concert also with him. So Peter had a little reputation, so when he backed off, everybody followed him. Not very good. Insomuch that Barnabas also was carried away or seduced with their hypocrisy. And that's what happens when you start looking at people and giving them too much reputation. Staking too much of your life into someone else's life. See?
But are you looking at them to condemn them?
No.
Or are you looking at them to pick up?
No, neither one. If I say something about somebody that's negative, but it's the truth, is my intention to hurt that person or to expose them? People need to be exposed sometimes to themselves. Because, you know, when you look in a mirror, you usually don't see yourself honestly. None of us do. We always try to see something better or try to see something worse, depending on how we esteem ourselves. If we truly love ourselves, we might honestly get kind of close to what we really are when we look in that mirror. Well, we try to get around it.
How many are exposing?
Yeah.
Kind of enlightening, bringing it to the light so you can see it there.
True. Jesus exposed people all the time. He didn't do it to condemn them, didn't do it to beat them up. But, you know, a lot of times we get caught up in things and we say, oh, daggone, I didn't even see what I was doing. Uh-huh. See? And that's what the exposing is, to show that individual, not to condemn them, not to embarrass them, but to show them, hey, you did something wrong. Just like he confronted Peter to his face. Peter was doing something hypocritical, and he brought it to his attention. And he didn't go behind a building to do it. He got him right in front of everybody.
That's not good.
Huh?
I don't think that's good.
Well, sometimes somebody like Peter was a hard case. He wasn't someone like John, who was a very sensitive person. If he'd done that to John, he'd have probably crushed him.
Well, and I think Paul was very overzealous.
Well, I'm sure he was, but he got the job done. He got done what he needed to get done. I don't think Paul did it with a mean spirit about him. I don't think he had it at that time. earlier on when he was killing people, yeah, I'd say he could have done it very easily. But now I don't think he's there.
Well, you've heard the term dumb as a rock.
Yep. Yep. Some of them that
Peter
way.
Was a rock.
Peter was a rock, and he might have had that rock chipped a little bit. Yeah. Verse 14, but when I saw that they walked not uprightly according to the truth of the gospel, and what it really says is the truth of the gospel, the reconciliation of all is what it is. All will be delivered. Okay. I said to Peter before them all, if you being a Jew live after the manner of the Gentiles and not as it is necessary that the Jews do the same thing, why compel you the Jews or the Gentiles to live as do the Jews? Why do you do that? Why are you requiring them to do something that you don't have to do? He knew better. Verse 15, we who are Jews by nature or by natural birth and not sinners of the Gentiles, knowing that a man is not justified or rendered innocent by the works of the law, but by or through the faith of Jesus Christ, and we have believed not in but into Jesus Christ. See, believe into him. Most people say, well, if you believe in Jesus, you've got it made. Don't they? I mean, it's over the billboards, it's on the way, airwaves today, where just believe in Jesus and you got it made. It says believe into. Do you realize how much of a difference that is?
Process.
It's a process of getting inside. If I get into this room or to the room, is there a difference? If I come to the room, I'm still outside. But when I come into this room, there's a difference. I'm inside now. When I become inside of him, when people look at me, what do they see?
Yeah.
They see him. They see his nature, not the old nature of me. That's why Paul said what he'll say the rest on through. Don't want to get ahead of myself. Where did I leave off here in 16? Yeah. Into Jesus Christ, that we, cross out that word might, because in order that we be justified or literally rendered innocent through the faith of Christ and not from the works of the law, because see this one, let's see what I'm writing here, my glasses are from, okay, I see what it is now. Because from the works of the law shall what? No flesh at all will be rendered innocent. Nothing can be rendered innocent by the acts, works of the law. You can't earn anything. And yet today, how many million people just in this country are trying to work their way in?
Bunches.
Millions of them. Okay, trying to work their way in, and it ain't got anything to do with it. I know a man who is trying to come out of the system, and yet he believes he has to be in that building every time that the doors are open. And he knows what they're teaching is wrong. He said, absolutely, I know what they're saying is wrong. He said, all of it. He said, I don't believe in hell no more like they teach. I don't believe in all this stuff. I don't believe in a devil. And he's, you know, I've been showing him a lot of things and helping him out. And yet, the same thing. He cannot go to church on a certain day if it's something he wants to do and it's okay. Really? I mean, it's amazing, see? That's all right. That's all right. So you got to let them find it on their own. You can only lead them in the path and they got to drink it. You can't make them drink, can you?
When the sun is ready to be burnt, Mama
can't stop it. Verse 17. And if while we seek to be rendered innocent through or in Christ, we ourselves also are found sinful, is therefore Christ the teacher of sin? What's that last word to say?
May it never be.
Well, King James says, God forbid, but it should say, may it never be. It's a Greek word, genomei. Should be, may it never be. The word God forbid is not one time in the scriptures. It's in there because man interpreted falsely, but it's never in there. Anytime you see that God forbid thing, it's may it never be.
Like amen is
yeah.
Let, So be it.
So be it, yep. Verse 18, because if I build or construct, let me see what I'm saying here. Once more, yeah, okay. If I construct once more the things which I destroyed, okay, or take off the burden, okay, which I destroyed, I what? I present myself a transgressor. If I do the things that I destroyed and try to build it back up the law again, he said I destroyed the law when I told you Christ died to do away with the law, and then I come back and try to build the law back up again, I'm presenting myself as a transgressor. And that, yep. And I think he said something about a double-minded.
Huh? I said that's what most of preachers are doing this morning.
That's, they're building back up the law again, reinforcing it. Yeah. That word, I destroyed, you know what that word really means? This is a point I want to make. But it says to take off the burden. It's the word kataluo. And it comes in Thayer's, it says it's number 2647 in Strong's, but it goes into this word but by taking off the burden. He said, I destroyed, but I took the burden off of you of the law, and then if I put it back on you, is what he's saying, then what's the point? I'm presenting myself as a problem. I'm the transgressor. Verse 19. Beg pardon?
I was just looking at trying to make out what I wrote.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you know, kind of hard to read.
Sometimes it is.
I crammed it in there.
My glasses this morning are not real clear, these readers. And my prescription glasses, I can see good through the top part of them, but the bifocal part is a real struggle. So.
It looks like I put take off for half of the night.
Yeah.
Time of darkness.
Take off the burden is what Thayer says on it.
So, take off the burden for half.
What good's that? Well, with, I mean, that goes with the thing, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying, the thought process there.
Yeah. Okay, verse 19. Because I, through the law, am dead to the law, that I, cross out the word might, that I live unto God. He said, through the law, I'm dead to the law, that I live unto God. Okay? The law will, I'm dead to the law, through the law. I can't do those things anymore. Just don't work.
It's like saying one day I live by the Ten Commandments, and the next day you're saying...
They don't work. Okay. And I got this little note beside it says, you must realize this to live godly, that you're dead to the law. Now, if I'm dead to the law, that means the law, the rules and regulations, and the penalties of those things have no bearing in my life. That means the law cannot intimidate you into doing something because it has no penalty over you. A dead man, you can't affect him, can you? Yeah, absolutely. It's somebody, some religious something that's trying to put something on you. Paul said, all things are lawful for me, but everything isn't profitable. So if I'm doing something and I just grabbed a beer and brought it out here this morning and set it on the table beside of me and sit and drink a beer while we're discussing the scriptures. You can't do that. Paul said, I could do anything, but it probably wouldn't be profitable because everybody'd think I was a devil. Okay, but that's their view of everything.
Their perception.
There's the one trying to put it on you. See, if you live and understand that all things are lawful, but it's not the most profitable all the time for you, then you won't let anybody condemn you for anything you believe you need to do in your life, can you? And that's when you're free and you scare the hell out of people because they can't control you or intimidate you anymore. Then they'll swear you're a devil. Because they can't scare you with fear. Devils and all that stuff. There you go.
Kind of like you got that clear conscience with God.
That you do.
Whatever, whatever they say, it doesn't really matter.
Like I said, I don't have to prove myself to anybody.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I seen that the other day. It's called Bill's Food.
Was they selling bras?
No, but
In verse 20, it says this. We're getting in some good stuff here. It says, I am crucified with Christ. What does that mean, crucified?
My flesh has been put down.
Well, let me give you what Thayer has to say about crucified with Christ. I have become dead to my former habits and feelings and actions. I have become dead to those. So in other words, the fear of what someone might do to me if I do something that they think is wrong doesn't have any effect on me anymore.
I don't think the one that's manifesting the Christ, if they're free in that,
it doesn't bother them.
They should not, you can be bold in it, but not to the point to where you're kind of like pushing it on people.
Well, no, because Paul said all things were lawful, he said, if eating meat would offend my brother, I will no longer eat meat.
And some people would do that to the point, but what I can do.
Yes, I'm saying that, and he's saying, no, you don't do that, but you can do it in yourself. I've said for a long time, what people think about me is none of my business. And that's where you have to come to in your life. I didn't have that for a long time. And it bothered me what people thought about me. But anymore, it doesn't bother me what they think about me because I know my Father loves me. And what more can you have? See? He loves me. I love Him because He first loved me. There's the whole key right there. If we get this love in our head the way it's supposed to be, then what somebody else does, what does it matter to me?
Didn't He even say that? What's it to you?
He told that about with Peter and John. Yeah. What God decides to do with Peter ain't none of your business, John. Or to John, it ain't none of their business. You just do what you're supposed to do, okay? But he said, I am crucified with Christ. So all of his things come dead to him. His former habits and feelings and actions have been dead because of Christ. Nevertheless, he said, I live. Yet not I, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live in the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave Himself for me. There's something really powerful here. Listen to the words He said. What was the last part of that said? The life which I now live in the flesh, I live in the faith of the Son of God. It's not my faith. Whose faith is it?
His faith.
Now here's the best part. Who loved me? I have to see this individually. He loved me so much that He gave Himself not for the world but for me.
Yeah.
Paul made this personal. You've got to see that I don't care what anybody else does. He loved me so much that He did that. If nobody else, He did it for me. I have to see that as a personal thing, not as this group thing. He's just going to lump us all together and it's okay. That's okay too. I know He did it for everybody, but I have to see it in the way that Paul has written it to us. This is my gospel. He wrote this. He did this for me. He wrote this for me. And when I realize that He loved me so much that He did these things for me, how do you think I'm going to respond to Him? Huh?
Respect and all.
How else could you not? And that's the way we got to see it. We can't take this as a casual way. It's got to be a personal thing. He did this for me. He loved me so much He died for me. He was crucified that I would live. Not that I might live. He did it that I would live for me. And when I can see it that way and understand it that way, the only thing I can give back to Him is love. Because now I know what's inside of me that's changed me. Now I'm in Him. And that nature that He is portrayed into my lifestyle. That's what He's trying to tell us to do. By His lifestyle, Paul did the same thing. What did Stephen do? Lay not this sin to their charge. I'll take it. Don't worry. They don't understand. They're ignorant. They don't understand. Don't worry about it. Okay, verse 21. I do not frustrate, that means to thwart or hinder, the grace, that divine influence in our lives, in that reflection back in our lifestyle, in our hearts, and back to lifestyle. I do not frustrate the grace of God. That what he said, I'm not trying to hinder or thwart or mess up the grace of God, because if righteousness came through the law, then Christ died needlessly, is what it should say. And Christ died on that cross for nothing at all if I could follow the rules and regulations of Jewish law and get there. That's just putting it as it is. He died for no reason. And I don't believe that. I don't believe God would have that go down for 1 minute. And for 1 second, I wouldn't believe it. I had a man came in his house one time. He was from down in Florida, and near Lakeland, Florida, I believe. And he went to a church there called Carpenter's Home Church. And he married a woman that they called a prophetess there. And she's supposed to be a great deliverer person, you know, cast demons out of people and everything. And they came up here, and I met the man, and we began to talk. He was just walking on the street, and he was more or less homeless while he was here. And he was, I think he was staying with a sister. Somebody had died, and he was trying to get the kids back to Florida with the parents, grandparents or something. And we started sharing some things, and next thing you know, he was coming over, staying with us in the house and driving my vehicle and doing whatever he wanted, you know, and become like a family member. And then whenever I began to share truth with him, he brought his wife up about a year later, and they come spent time with us. And the man stood up and was wanting to punch me out in my house because I said, Jesus, God sent Jesus to the cross. He didn't believe that. He said God did not do that. He did not send his son to die, though the devil did it, you know. Really? Really? I mean, here a man that, you know, and it says in chapter 4, Paul says, he said, I'm your friend, and because I tell you the truth, now I'm your enemy. See? I mean, that's just what happens when you tell them the truth. They just absolutely go berserk on you. I've had a lot of them do it, and it's okay. I don't care, because I'm not going to change unless God changes me. He made me this way. When he wants me to change, he'll change me. That's not being arrogant about anything. It's just, I know who I am, and I know my Father loves me. And beyond that, rest of it don't mean a whole lot. Any questions?